Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Tuesday, November the 5th of 2019, and this is episode number 26. I'm very excited about this episode. We're going to almost kind of feel like we're taking a little trip around the world today. I'm going to bring in my first guest all the way from the, you can correct me on this, Phil, but you're from the far north portion of Australia. Phil Staley. Phil, how are you today and how are things in Australia?
You got the description right, Rob. I'm terrific. Thanks for asking and thanks for the invite to be on the show. It's brilliant. And living in the city that I do, which is called Cairns, far north Queensland in Australia on the east coast, I don't think I've ever spoken to another member of the Dog Pound. So this is really special for me.
I feel privileged. And I'm serious about that. I do. I mean, that's really cool. We've talked on Twitter and that a bit, but yeah, to actually be able to talk to you on Skype, it's really cool. I've talked to some people in Great Britain and, you know, around the U.S., but I don't think I've talked to anybody quite this far away before on Skype. So it's really an honor. It's really cool to talk to you.
No, you too, mate. And, you know, I'm not trying to correct you. Where I'm sitting, it's halfway through November the 6th. So technically, you're back in time as I sit here now.
Wow. So we're adding the time travel element to the show as well. I like that.
Yeah. And but I know that you like to talk about what beer you've got in your hand sometimes, but I got to profess that I'm at work, so I haven't got a beer.
That's no problem. Yeah, our Blitz beverage, you don't have one with you, but I'm dying to hear about the type of beverage that you drink. What type of beer, you know, maybe tell me about your favorite or something that you would drink if you were just kind of relaxing on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you how it works for me because Browns games are on a Monday at about 4 a.m. That's if you got your 1 p.m. Sunday kickoff. So I don't get up and watch that. And in fact, I work in early morning radio, so I've got to come to work anyway. But at about 1 or 2 p.m., I go home, via the bottle shop, and buy what's called a Tui's New, which is my favorite beer at the moment, preservative-free beer, but you know, full-strength lager, about 4.9%. And that way I can sit down on my couch with a couple of Tui's Blues, or I like to drink them as a tallies, or you might call them 40 ounces. Where you are, that's the kind of two drinks in one. It just means I'm lazy. I don't have to go back to the fridge when I'm halfway done.
Yeah.
And I watch a replay of the Browns game, which, well, is less than ideal lately, but what can we do?
Well, I mean, it kind of helps to have a beer in your hand when you're watching a replay of the Browns game most of the time, right?
It's true. It's
what
true.
Can we say?
So what beer have you got? You'll have a beer that I won't have heard of.
I'm drinking a platform, which is, I've had different platforms and my wife and I were out and I just found this one. It's a platform Esther and it's actually a Belgian style Christmas ale. So this is my first Christmas ale of the season and I was dying to try this. So I pulled it out of the fridge and Phil, I didn't notice until I opened it that this is a 9.5% alcohol beer.
Wow.
So I'll do my best to hang with you as we talk, but 9.5%. It's got a great flavor, just like you would expect from any platform beer. And it's got a good flavor. It says right on the can, bold, aromatic, and complex. And I would go with that. And I'm sure people are going to see this around. They're going to want to give it a shot, and it's definitely worth it. So, like any other platform, it's a good pickup.
I want to try it, but I've got to say, go easy on it because at 9.5%, I don't want to have to carry the end of the show because this is all new to me.
Well, I would not drink a 40-ouncer of a 9.5%. This happens to be a 12-ounce good. Can.
Good.
And that'd be plenty for me.
And that's in Australian terms, we would say that's 375 mils. But, you know, metric system differences, whatever.
I gotcha. Yeah. Just tiny little things, right?
So, yeah.
We've gotten the beer part out of the way, so let's dive into some Browns talk.
Okay.
So, we had another game this past Sunday, and unfortunately, another loss. Browns are 2-6 after a 24-19 loss to the Broncos, and the natives are getting restless. People are not real happy with Freddie Kitchens. I'm hearing a lot of people questioning Baker Mayfield and his regression.
Yep.
And people wanting changes. So I guess we could talk a little bit about this game first of all, and then maybe talk about some of the, you know, some of the expectations and maybe some other things with the Browns. But what were some of your takeaways from the actual game?
Well, it's frustrating, isn't it? I feel the frustration of the dog pound because it feels like we're watching the same thing every week. You know, we're not getting thrashed ever.
No.
But we're always right there in the games, and it's always, we can always point to one play. And look, sometimes in the past it's been one referee's call, but I don't want to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
But this time we're talking about going for it on a third and short with Chubb off the field. So I get that people are calling for Kitchens because it feels like we don't have the right guys being the targets in the key moments at the right time. But I don't know, to flip the argument around, it feels like if you're not in those positions where you have to score on that drive, otherwise you've done it, then that's the problem. You know, if we're only just trying to win games with perfect execution when you're down six or whatever it was, I mean, that's a lot to ask any NFL team to get it absolutely perfectly right in the most crucial play of the game. And I think if you plan your season on that, rarely you're going to succeed. I mean, that's the stuff that maybe the Patriots perhaps do it well as far as execution. But you know what I mean? So I think we got to look at why we're getting into them positions in the first place. And some of them turnovers at the start of the game were ridiculous. So it's hard to point my finger at it. I don't know, Rod. I wanted to ask you about the expectations, though, because weren't we all excited in the offseason? And were you looking at the paper?
We were very excited, yeah. Yeah.
And you're looking at the team on paper and all these Pro Bowl names jumping off the sheet, and you're thinking, yeah, but I don't know. I guess in hindsight, which is always valuable, you know, I was thinking about this last night, thinking, you know, I reckon every season, at the start of the season, there's probably about 20, 22 teams that you would read and say, that's a really good roster, you know, on paper. 20, 22 odd teams, you know, might have one or two Pro Bowlers. But then you think only 12 teams going to make the playoffs, and then only one of those going to win the Super Bowl. So I don't know if maybe we got excited just because we had a great team on paper, and we did, but so did 22 other sides or more. So I just think we're not used to having that. And when we had it, and you throw in someone like OBJ, you're talking about one of the top players at his position, which is so rare for the Browns. I think we definitely got overexcited, but I don't know. We need to put it in check. I'm not ready to give up on Baker. What are your thoughts on Kitchens? I can't decide. It's just weird. We're the best team we've had in ages, and we went with a rookie coach, and that's interesting.
Well, I mean, to go way back, I think that the expectations part was not only the additions, but it was the way 2018 finished.
Yeah,
it was true. Winning what, 5 out of the last 8.
Yep. Didn't lose double digits for the first time in who knows how long.
So you're thinking here's a team that's it's 7-8-1. So we're thinking now we've got, you know, we don't have Hugh Jackson for 8 games. We've got Freddie in there who granted was not the head coach, but he had a great handle on the offense. I think we thought that things were in good hands with Freddie. At least I did.
Mm.
Part of the problem for me was that I didn't expect Baker to regress.
Yeah.
But quarterbacks do regress in their second year quite often. I think it's just something that happens. Baker hasn't lost his talent or his ability. He's going to be fine. There's things that have to be worked out, whether it's the quarterback coach, whether it's the play calling, whether it's the offensive line, or whether it's just Baker's head. You know, things will get figured out, and Baker will be fine. So in the long run, I'm not worried about Baker. Freddie Kitchens, I love Freddie Kitchens as a person. I want so badly for him to succeed, and I've been back and forth with people on Twitter ever since people started calling for his job, which has probably been at least a couple weeks now, if not more. Yeah, I think some people wanted him fired probably 3 or 4 weeks into the season already, because of some of the mistakes he's made, and he's made some mistakes. Yeah, he's made some bad mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem is, I don't think you can really evaluate a coach after 8 games. I don't think a rookie coach has had time to really show what he can do in 8 games. I think new coaches make mistakes. I think new coaches learn from their mistakes. I think there's still a chance that Freddie could be a really good coach. There's a lot of great coaches that started out their career with a bad stretch at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then
I think I saw you tweet that Landry might have gone 1-7 or something like that in his first 8 games.
It was a retweet. Yeah. So I can't take credit for it, but
here's a question though, Rod. Sorry to cut you off, mate.
Go ahead.
Well, what I was wondering is, you know, we really hung a lot of faith on Baker. Sure, we had those signings, you know, Vernon and all these big names, but how would you feel if we did win next year? Let's say we become one of them perennial 10-win teams or better, but Baker has a Ryan Tannehill type career, where he's not throwing 4 picks and no touchdowns a game, but he's throwing 2-2, but we win. I'm just wondering if we thought that Baker has to be an Aaron Rodgers type stats or a, you know, someone like that, but maybe he doesn't for us to win. I mean, he's playing poorly, but I wonder how the Browns family would feel if we did start getting wins, but Baker, in hindsight, has a Ryan Tannehill type career.
I don't know how you could complain about that with what we've been through in Cleveland for the last for the last 20 years, going on 21 years
now. And you know, what if I didn't say what if he had a Brandon Whedon type career? Like I respect where we're coming.
If you're talking about having a team who's consistently doing well, that's, you know, I live near Cincinnati, so I have a reference, and I talk to a lot of Bengals fans who, you know, they just let Marvin Lewis go. Marvin Lewis came in and turned the team around and got them to where they were winning, whatever, 8, 9, 10 games a season every year.
Yep.
And we're losing the first game of the playoffs every year. Well, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, well, it eventually got him fired, didn't it?
It got him fired, but he was there for like 15 years or something. I don't have the exact number because this is a Browns podcast. But, he improved the team. He couldn't take them to the next step, but they went from being a laughing stock to a team that made the playoffs almost every year. They couldn't win in the playoffs.
Yeah, so, but here we sit now. They're 0-8. So what would you prefer as a fan? I know. Man, I wish I had the answers, and you're closer to the project than I am sitting over here in Australia. But I don't know. I still want to feel optimism because I know what it's like to have – no optimism or being optimistic about Cody Kessler or something, you know, false optimism. So I honestly still feel with, you know, O-line needs some work, no doubt about it, but that's fixable. That's doable. That's just a couple of off-season transactions.
The game planning can be fixed. I think I've seen a person or two question on Twitter whether Baker's 100% healthy or not because of the one game where he kind of got tackled hard on his shoulder and he's not going downfield as much and his throws don't have quite the same zip. So maybe he's not 100%. you know, that's not an excuse. Maybe there's an issue there, so maybe that can be remedied. But I really feel that based on what we saw last year, that Baker is just kind of, he's in a slump right now, and he's trying to figure things out, and teams are throwing everything at him, and he's learning, and I think he's going to be okay. I think what we saw last year in 18 in that season is going to be more typical of what we see of Baker throughout his career. Yeah. The arm strength, the ability to thread the ball into a tight window, he's got to learn to make his reads. He's got to learn to understand what defenses are really going to do versus what they're showing him initially, because I think that's what they're doing to him now. And I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah, my problem, I hope you're right.
My problem with Freddie is that I like Freddie. I think Freddie has all the characteristics from the outside to be a great coach. Okay, but he obviously he's actually has to be able to execute, and that's the part that we don't get to see. But here's the problem with saying, oh, we gotta let Freddie go after 8 games. Okay. We always do this. We always let coaches go. So we're gonna let Freddie go after 8 games. Who are you gonna get? You're going to elevate somebody to be interim, somebody who's here to be interim. Then you're going to try to hire somebody. Okay, who wants to come to Cleveland to be the next guy who gets 8 games?
Yeah, it's a good point. But to play devil's advocate, if someone else comes in now, sure, you're not going to get somebody's OC coordinator. Urban Meyer, man, why not? But you get 8 games of a run-in. Because it's not unusual that an interim then gets the job in NFL circles either. So, you know, I agree with you.
I don't know how many. I guess if you really thought you could find somebody who's available now who you could use for next year, that would be different. I just don't know who would be available now that they would see as a top candidate.
Yeah, I think you're right. Can I ask about the Bills game then? And I've got to, if you don't mind, I'm going to point out the Bills game for me this Monday. Sorry, Sunday, where you are.
Yeah.
it's special for me because you might be thinking, what the heck is this guy from Australia doing being a hardcore Browns fan? But the truth is, the first time I ever discovered NFL football on Australian TV, it was late night Tuesday nights. They show highlights of all the games, and then Don Lane would come on with the game of the week. And it was 1990, January 6th. We were playing the Bills in the playoffs when Eric Metcalf ran those 2 kickoffs for touchdowns. And that was the first game I'd seen. And I watched this team and they had just white uniforms with an orange helmet and no logo. And I'm thinking, these guys are great. this is the go. There was something about, that's my team. And look,
they tricked you, didn't they?
I don't think we won since then. But
they really tricked you, Phil.
Yeah, and we got the same with the college ball. And a lot of OSU fans won't like this because the same experience I had on a Wednesday night was I saw a Penn State game. Very similar, you know, no logo on the helmet, just plain blue strips or white strips, and they were good. And I went, that's my team, and I don't know, I'm loyal. So I've stuck with the Cleveland Browns, and Ohio State fans will hate to hear that I am a Penn State man, but really, I have no affiliation. Hey, I'm 10,000 kilometers away, so. But because they were playing the Bills, I always get excited about this because – it reminds me of my first Browns game. And I think it's going to be tough. But, you know, you got to turn it around at some point. So why can't it be this week?
And I appreciate anybody who's loyal to their teams, regardless of who their teams are.
Yeah.
So I have no problem with you being a Penn State fan whatsoever.
And let's be honest, Ohio State's probably going to flog them this year. So I'm not, you know.
We'll see. Anyway, I mean, Penn State's ranked pretty high. They're a pretty good team, so we will have to see. So what are you expecting in this game against the Bills?
I'm thinking that if Freddie Kitchens is hearing 5% of the chatter, I mean, he can come on and say, I think I saw him quoted as saying, look, I don't think about my coaching future because it's not in my hands. And I call rubbish on that. I don't think there's a coach alive that doesn't think about that. So I'm hoping that he's taking some of it on board. Now, some of it, as you said, is fair criticism. He has made errors. if he's going to try and rectify the situation, he needs to make some adjustments. If he were to roll out and make the same errors again, then the seats only get hotter. So I think, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, that he will make some of these adjustments. We've got pretty exciting running back to add to the mix as well. So I think, I don't think it would be an upset if we won. The records of the Browns and the Bills would say otherwise, but no, we've been close in all of our games. We ain't lost by two scores against the Patriots, despite errors. So I think the Bills can be the platform for us to launch. And then, of course, you rub our hands and get ready for the squealers.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I think the Browns can match up well with the Bills. I know the Bills have a good defense, but they're vulnerable to the run. So yeah. Especially with Chubb and Hunt, I think the Browns can run.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't wait to see what form Hunt's in. But you know, their quarterback Allen, I think he's someone like Myles Garrett, who hasn't had a sack for about three games. I think he'll be thinking, don't be scrambling on me.
He's due. Yeah, Miles is due.
He is.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get things rolling with a win next week, since we didn't get one this week.
Yeah, and we can take credit for it because we talked about it.
That would be terrific.
Right.
That's how it works. Phil, I want you to give your Twitter handle out so people can follow you and interact with you.
No, I appreciate that. Well, you can get me on Phil, Phil underscore Staley, Staley. My photo is, there's an idiot there trying to kiss a crocodile. That is me. It's not a real crocodile. It just looks real because I'd be dead otherwise.
You've learned your lesson. Well, you were kind of raised that way over there, I guess. So,
yes.
Australia. So you're just smart.
Yeah, well, right. Look, if you ever visit my part of the world, just stay out of the water. That's all you need to know.
I think I'll remember that. Phil, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we can do this again at some point.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity, Rod, and it's good, as I said, to talk to members of the Dog Pound, and salute to all the Dog Pound members. Hang in there. Let's not give up.
All right. Thanks, Phil.
See ya.
And joining me now is Peter Jones. Peter, how are you?
Rod, I'm very good. How are you?
I'm just doing great. So how are things in England?
It's what we would call a probably typical English fall weather, kind of wet and rainy and just drizzly and just murky and
days
to stay indoors.
Kind of like what I'm seeing out my window.
Right.
Sounds very familiar. Yeah, probably a little bit darker over there, but yeah. So we haven't come up with a name yet for your segment. We're going to do that, but we're going to talk some kind of football history when we have you on every other week. And let's just dive right in. So I'm going to let you introduce our topic for this show, and then we'll kick it around for a while.
Okay, thanks, Rod. So as you know, I'm into the history and very much about the trends and how the game changes over the years. And in particular, one of the things I've been looking at recently is you know, the opening up of the passing game and the way that that's impacted not only the obvious things, you know, the passer rating and how much easier it typically is to move the football through the air now, but also the impact that's had on other positions, and in particular the cornerback position. And it just seems to me that these days the cornerback position has become almost impossible to play in the NFL. And you know, we used to have a number of guys that we would call shutdown corners, and those guys would literally shut down, you know, the opposing wide receiver to the point where that receiver was catching no balls again. And even more so for me was the impact it's had on cornerback pairings. So through the history of the NFL from the 1950s onwards, there has always seemed to be a stellar cornerback pairing, you know, starting with the guys in Detroit in the late 50s and 60s, Night Train Lane, and Dick LeBeau and those mm-hmm. guys and the Packers guys, Herb Adderley with Bob Jeter in the 60s and so on and so forth. But those pairings seem to have gone out of the game in the last 30 years. And one of the last great pairings was Frank Minifield and Hanford Dixon, the Browns. And yeah. Dixon's last season was 30 years ago this year. So I thought it was quite kind of apt to kind of talk about those guys in relation to great cornerback pairings.
Yeah, when you mentioned 30 years ago, it's hard to imagine. It's been that long.
I know. It just seems like 10 minutes ago, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And everybody, you know, the younger crowd's probably chuckling at us right now. But but yeah, it does not seem like that long ago. Watching those guys, and they were so good and so much fun to watch because they were shut down guys in their prime. They were shut down guys that could take two guys away.
Absolutely, and you know, lots of teams since then have had one great corner. You know, the Deion Sanders and so on and so forth, but you can't think of one that's had that great a pairing since that time, and. You know, those guys, Dixon and Minifield, went to multiple Pro Bowls together at the same time. You can imagine two corners from the same team starting in the Pro Bowl together. I think they did that 3 years on the trot, which has never been done before mm-hmm. or since. And I remember Boomer Esiason being interviewed and saying how difficult it was to go into Cleveland and play with the dog pound, which those two guys pretty much created, didn't they? They pretty much, those were the guys that started off that whole dog pound thing.
They were, You know, I think Hanford Dixon gets a lot of the credit, but definitely. I'm sitting in my study. I have an autographed picture of him right in front of me, signed by Top Dog. You know, that's Hanford Dixon. So, definitely it originated with him. And those guys kick things off, definitely.
And Boomer Esiason, you know, he talks, I've seen him interviewed talking about, you know, he'd look over to one side and there was Hanford Dixon, you know, and he'd turn to his other side. I can't throw the other way either because there's Frank Minifield. He's got nowhere to go. Oh, by the way, if I look too much down the middle, I've got Clay Matthews on the pass rush coming at me, by the way, guys. So, you know, those two corners, I think it's difficult almost to describe to fans now 30 years on that didn't see them play how much of a shutdown pairing they were. I know that there was one season towards the end of the 80s where Hanford Dixon was the ball was thrown in his direction seven times throughout the whole season. You know, that's
unimaginable.
You know, guys get it thrown at them seven times a half these days, you know. And what made those guys so great? They were both were great ball players, you know, so both of them came up with multiple interceptions over the course of their career. But they were tough, bump and run cover corners who would knock the holy crap out of the receivers. Can I say that? I have now. You know, and you know, they were just rough, tough guys that made their areas, you know, a no-go area. And you know, it's sad for me to think that pairing of corners, we haven't seen another one like it in 30 years.
Well, I think it just goes back to what you're, you know, the way you introduced this, that it is so hard to play corner now with the current rules, that to cover guys without getting penalties called on you. And it's things, the league is definitely set up now for the offense. The league wants points scored, so it's a lot harder to play defense, to cover guys without, you know, without getting penalties called on you, and things just aren't legal now that used to be legal back then. So who knows? There could be guys in the league that, you know, may have been maybe capable of playing that style of play if the rules were different, but it's just so hard to play corner right now. And I'm not taking anything away from those guys. Those guys were amazing. But the cornerback position is, like you said, it's nearly impossible to play. A guy who is going to make the Pro Bowl as a cornerback, he's given up touchdowns. He's given up catches. it's just how the game is now.
Yeah, no, it really is, and it's you know, I like to have a nice balance between offense and defense, and I guess that I was fortunate, even though I wasn't a Cleveland Browns fan, to watch those guys. You know, when I was learning a lot about football, and the pairing that I liked before them was the Raiders pairing of Mike Haynes and Lester Hayes. You know, Lester Hayes with his stickum all over his body, that any ball that hit him anywhere seemed to stick to him.
where we kind of felt like, something seems a little bit off here, but you know, well, what the heck, you know, it seems to work. Hey.
Yeah. and you know, opposite him, it was the kind of silky smooth corner, Mike Haynes, who came over from New England and was a multiple all pro in New England before he went to the Raiders. And it was that pairing. And then the pairing, the Cleveland pair of Dixon and Minifield, that I guess really made me start to appreciate defense and appreciate cornerback play. And those pairings together were just fantastic. And, you know, to put the Cleveland pair into some kind of context, they played together for six whole seasons from 84 through 89. And the Browns made the playoffs 85, 86, 87, 88, 89. You know, so five of those six seasons that they played together, the Browns were in the playoffs. Now, I know and the Browns had a lot of other good players, as we know, some great players, like Clay Matthews and Bernie Kosar and what have you. But, you know, those pair on the corners, and if you look at the, you know, the defense was in the top 10 in yards six times in 7 years. And in points given up, they were in the top 10 best defense five times in six seasons in that period. And so it's funny, as you say, it's funny how that works. Those guys, like I say, I think unless you go back and are able to watch the film, it's difficult to understand how good those guys were. And I think we really miss having those kind of physical shutdown corners in today's game. I think we miss that balance.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's fun watching guys make great catches, and it can be fun seeing a shootout here and there. But every now and then, just a nice defensive struggle is just kind of fun to watch from a football perspective.
Yeah, very much so, and. Yeah, I just miss it. So I just thought that it was it would be nice to just spend, like I say, 5 or 10 minutes just talking about those cornerback pairings. I mean, there were others around similar period. You know, Ronnie Lott and Eric Wright at the 49ers. That was before Lott moved to safety. You know, he was an all-pro corner before he played safety. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, the Steelers teams of the 70s, Mel Blunt and JT Thomas.
Yeah.
You know. So all of those really great teams had that cornerback pairing, and I just miss it.
So while we're talking corners, the historian that you are, why don't you give me your top three corners of all time, Peter? I'm sure you have a list.
I don't have a list in front of me, but I can certainly reel them off. So Mike Haynes would be my number one. So. Nine-time Pro Bowler for the Patriots and then the Raiders. So he played on some not too great Patriots teams in the late 70s and early 80s. And then was traded to the Raiders in 82 or 83 to team up with Lester Hayes. And he would be my number one. And it's interesting because Al Davis always had this thing about getting corners. You know, he'd trade guys away to get corners. He would have four or five corners that could start on most teams. So cornerbacks were Al Davis's thing, you know. Even on that Raiders team then, you know, they still had old man Willie Brown, who recently passed away, was still on the Raiders roster around that period. So Mike Haynes would be my number one guy. My number two guy would be, so I'm a little bit biased as a Packers fan. My number two guy would be Herb Adderley, who played on Lombardi's Packers teams in the 60s. So he played and won the first two Super Bowls, and then in 70 was traded to the Cowboys and played and won two more Super Bowls with the Cowboys. So he's one of the few guys that won at that time. I think he won four of the first six Super Bowls or something like that.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty impressive. Huh?
Yeah. And he's a guy that was drafted out of college as a running back. It was converted to corner and ended his career with 48 interceptions or that kind of number. And I guess the other one that comes to mind that's really difficult to leave off an all-time cornerback list would be Dick Nitrain Lane, the Lions. And again, that's a guy that you've only kind of seen on tape. And, you know, so playing in the 50s and early 60s, a guy that you've seen on tape that you've read about. And I had the good fortune to talk to Ray Berry, or Raymond, as he should probably be called, the old Baltimore Colts receiver, mm-hmm. Hall of Famer. And Ray was really high on both Herb Adderley and Dick Nitrain Lane. So a recommendation from Raymond Berry is good enough for me to get Nitrain Lane into my top three.
That sounds good.
What about yourself?
You know what? I mean, you've studied this a lot more than me, but you know, just from afar, obviously the Raiders corners, I would put Mike Haynes up there just because I know how tough he was against the Browns in the playoffs, and you know, beyond that, I'm probably a lot more. You know, would probably go more current, not current, but more recent. So, you know, Deion Sanders was a little bit different style, but it's probably hard to keep him off of a list like that. Yep. And, you know, I would probably go with Dick Nitrain Lane also, just because of what I've seen and heard about him. So I would probably go with those three guys. And it's hard for me not to pick one of the Browns guys, but it's hard to pick one over the other as well.
And I think that's absolutely the issue. And that is also, you know, one of the difficulties that you have when, you know, if you're potentially looking at Hall of Fame and that kind of thing, it's which one of the two. You know, whereas, you know, when you have one outstanding corner or one outstanding player at any position, it's a lot easier to go for that one outstanding player. I mean, but yeah, I think our quorum of four or five that we've got there: Mike Haynes, Lester Hayes, Mike Haynes, Dick Nitrain Lane, Herb Adderley,
Deion Sanders.
I think we've got the makings of a good nickel defense there.
I think they do all right. Yeah. All right, Peter. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing what you bring to us in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. So, thanks for having me on, and go Browns.
All right. Take care, Peter. And I'm here with the big dog. How are we doing tonight, Heath?
Well, I'll put it this way. I sure hope I do a lot better this week than I did last week. Man, those games beat me up. Just some of the outcomes in the last second, you know, changes and scores and just the turnovers and just, I mean, just really the Browns, who they come out and was flat and tried to get back in it and couldn't get back in it. And the one that really broke my heart was the Vikings. I just thought they were going to go into Kansas City and take care of business, and it looked really, really good. And in fact, Vegas had it as it was the highest in-game bet at halftime than any other game on the slate, where you can actually go in and bet at halftime. They put a different spread up, and it was the most bet game. And goodness gracious, if Kansas City didn't come back to win that game, and then the other one, it was a heartbreaker, was Adam Vinatieri, future Hall of Famer, missing a chip shot field goal to give Pittsburgh the win. I mean, that was just a really weird week. So we're going to turn it around this week. We'll get her going. And our straight up between the two of us, you're up 1-0 on that, man. So you've got the early lead in that.
Yeah, it's not like I'm packing a whole lot of confidence right now, having picked one game right out of three. But
I was 0-3, so that just makes you a little bit better than what I did. So, in fact, you know,
we're gonna improve on that, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, you, like I said before, you're gonna have good weeks, you're gonna have bad weeks, and in fact, you know, it's. It is what it is. I mean, you know, like I said before, last week I said, it's so hard this year with the way that the league's set up with teams tanking, and, you know, you don't know what team's going to show up. I mean, look at the Packers that was beating everybody, and they go into LA Chargers, and they were like a 4.5 or 5 point favorite on the road, and were down 9-0 at halftime. And Aaron Rodgers had about 40 yards passing, and they still end up getting beat by double digits by the Chargers. I mean, so
yeah, how do you predict that?
You can't. You just can't predict it. And realistically, right. And I know the one that beat you. Did anybody see Baltimore blowing out the New England Patriots?
No, I thought that 4-point spread was pretty conservative.
Oh my,
I really
goodness.
Did. I felt pretty comfortable given the 4 points. I had a lot of confidence in that.
That was. I don't know, man. Because to me, I know Baltimore is not as good as they have shown the last couple weeks. But then again, I don't think New England and Seattle, who they've beaten the last 2 weeks, are world beaters either. Like I said, New England, yeah, they've been a great team in the past, but when you look who they've played this year, and they've really only had a couple decent teams play against them, and it's been close. Look at the Browns game with them. You take away the first three plays of the game on our side, the turnovers, we outscored them 13-10 on their you know, at their field. So, you know, who knows? All I know is the Browns better start winning some football games. But
I am all in favor of that.
Oh, they better. They better. So anyways, do you want me to do some picks here, and then we'll do our little segment where we go against each other?
Yeah, why don't you go with your standard picks, and then we'll pick our games. Yeah.
All right. Hopefully we can improve a little bit this week. It's a tough slate, and there's some great games out there. I mean, this is gonna be a really good weekend to sit back and watch the football. Now, the one that I love is I like playing the over-unders, because you just look at who your two teams are and the powerful offenses. And most of your teams that have powerful offenses, their defenses tend to give up points, because they're basically they're built to score points. And I'm looking at the Chargers-Raiders game Thursday night. It's got a spread of 48.5. I don't know how that stays under 48.5. I believe it's going to go over 48.5. So I'm going to do an over-under with the Chargers and Raiders on Thursday, and I'm going to bet over 48.5. I'm going to go to my underdog. And that's the team that I think not only is an underdog, but they have a chance to win. And I'm going to take the Arizona Cardinals. They're getting 4 points, and that's at Tampa Bay. Arizona's got a pretty decent defense. They can put some points up on the board. And I'm figuring Jameis Winston will probably throw couple, two, three picks. That's just him. A lot of points are going to be scored. This almost was going to be my over-under. They've set it all the way up to 52 points. So there's hardly going to be any defense in this game, and that's why I think the 4 points will cover, and there's a really good chance the Cardinals will win. So I'm going to take my underdog team of the week is Arizona plus the 4. Now, I did a parlay last week, so what I'm going to do this week is I'm going to do a teaser, and I'm going to do a six-team teaser. I'm sorry, a six-point teaser, and I'm going to use a three-team teaser with it. So basically, all you're doing is you're taking the points, and you can move them 6 points up, 6 points back, but you got to hit all three games. So I'm going to do a three-teamer, which will pay 2-1 if you do it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the Panthers, and they're in Green Bay, and they're getting 5. So by the six-point push, I get Carolina with 11. And then I'm going to look down here in Pittsburgh where the Rams are playing the Steelers. The Rams are minus 3.5. I'm going to take the Steelers. You lose the half point in a teaser. So I'm going to take the Steelers plus 9 at home. And then to close it out, I'm going to jump to the Monday Night Football game. San Francisco is at home. They're minus 6. I'm going to drop them down to even. I'm going to take the 49ers at home even. So it's basically, so let me get that for you there. So you got 49ers even, Steelers plus 9, and Carolina plus 11. That pays 2-1. You just got to hit them all. So we got that one. Now the last one I'm going to give you. This one's tough. It's my best bet of the week. My best bet of the week last week was the Vikings at Kansas City. That should have hit. I mean, it just was all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Kirk Cousins forgot how to throw the ball, and Kansas City got put back into the game. So here's my best bet of the week, and that is the Cleveland Browns. And the reason I'm going to take the Browns is my best bet of the week. I'm going to take them at home, laying 2.5 points. They got to win. They have to win this ball game. They are at home. They have not won at home yet. They are a desperate football team. You put a desperate football team against the wall, they're going to come out and they're going to play with everything they got. And they want to win for the home fans. So I expect Freddie to make the offense a lot easier this week. I think basically they're just going to scrap what they've been doing and just go back to basics. And I think you're going to see a whole different offense. I think you're going to see a lot of Nick Chubb. Buffalo has a really good defense. They're actually better than Denver's defense. But being at home, and hopefully the crowd will be behind them. I know they will, because real Cleveland Browns fans will be behind this team. They're not going to lose this week. I'm taking the Browns as my best bet, minus 2.5, and I'm going to say it's going to be somewhere around, probably around 23-17, 23-16, somewhere around there. So hopefully they'll come through, but that's my best bet. I think the Browns are the team to take this week. They got to win. If they don't win this week, I think it's going to be a very interesting Monday in Berea.
I like the pick. I really want to see a win, so I'm hoping that you're right on this one, Big Dog.
Yep.
And, yeah. So are we ready to move on to
let's do our
segment?
Pick. Yeah.
We're going to do better this week, right?
We will do better this week. Well, I mean, like I said, we picked 3 games. You were 1-2. I was 0-3. It happens. You know, it wasn't like we, you know. I mean, goodness gracious, you had the Patriots minus 3.5 at Baltimore, and they got beat by double digits. I mean, no, that's just craziness. That's just stuff that just doesn't happen. I mean, so you know what? let's see what we can do. I think we can turn it up, and let's go 3-0 this week, both of us. So you go ahead and lead off, brother.
Sounds good. All right, I'm going to start out by taking the Minnesota Vikings +3 at Dallas.
Okay.
Which sounds vaguely familiar to the game you picked as your best bet last week.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Minnesota's
got to bounce back. They've got to play better. So I think they're going to do it. I think the Cowboys are a team that they can do it against.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I am going to, with my picks, I'm not going to do any that I put in my other games. So I'm going to definitely do different ones. Well, when I look at the board, I have to take the Saints -13 at home against the Falcons. You've got Drew Brees back under center, and he was back under center last week, and a guy goes out and throws for almost 400 yards, and I think he threw 3 or 4 touchdown passes in his first game back. Now you got a team that's totally tanking, that doesn't care. They just want to get the season. They're 1-7. They're 1-7, and they're 0-4 on the road, walking into the Saints, who's 7-1, 4-0, that wants to get home field all the way through the playoffs. So I think they're going to blow them out. I like the Saints -13.
Okay. Kind of had that one marked that way, but 13 points is a lot. I kind of learned my lesson last week, so I'm going to kind of avoid the games with spreads that big.
Right.
So I'm going to take, in the Battle of New York, I'm going to take the Giants, and I think I'm giving 2.5 there, right?
Yep.
So I'll take the Giants. I just think the Jets are awful. I think the Giants can cover 2.5.
Yeah. Let me think about this. You got a humongous, incredible media central New York City, and your two head coaches are Pat Shurmur and Adam Gase. I mean, like, when they were hiring Pat Shurmur, I'm thinking, do they not get the intranet? And in New York City, did they not see this guy's press conferences? Do they not understand he's not a good football coach? They're already saying that they don't think he's a leader of men. That they're saying that both of these head coaches could be fired within the next 2 weeks. And they're saying Adam Gase, who's in his first year with the Jets, if he loses Sunday to the Giants, that he will be fired after the game. And Pat Incredible. Shurmur, yeah, I mean, you just think about that. If you think about New York City and the attraction to get just great players and great coach, you know, what's his name? McCarthy. He wanted to coach the Jets last year, and they didn't even bring him in for an interview. He wanted the job. He put it out there. Boomer Esiason, who's on The Fan in New York every morning, was pushing for this guy, and they wouldn't even bring him in for an interview. Anyways, you know,
yeah,
we think we got it bad here. Oof. That's not good there. Okay, so let's see here. Well, I think what I'm going to do here is, because they are starting to play a little bit better, and I like them at home, and they're physical, I think I'm going to take the Chicago Bears at home, laying the 2.5 to the Detroit Lions. It's going to be cold out there, and you're talking about a dome team heading into Chicago against a team that will be thriving in that weather, and their biggest thing is the Lions is they love playing indoors on that turf because they got speedy wide receivers. He just airs the ball out to them. not going to be able to do it in Chicago. They're going to be draped all over them. They're going to get, it's going to be a punch you in the mouth game. And I'll take the Bears every day in a game like that. So I'm going to take the Bears laying the 2.5 at home against the Lions.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. The Lions, I still don't think they know what they're doing at running back either. So
no, nope.
So I think that's a good pick. So I am down to, let me see here, which one do I want to go with? You know what? I'll just go with my hunch pick. I think the Green Bay Packers are going to come out and play a heck of a game at home. So I'll give up 5 points to a good Carolina defense, or at least pretty good most of the time. Not all the time.
Well, and that's why I took Carolina in the teaser to get the extra 6 points. I'm not going to take them with the 5, but I'll take them with the 11.
Yeah, so I'll take Green Bay. I'll take Green Bay -5 in that game.
Yep. Especially after last week. They got embarrassed by the Chargers.
Yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to come out and, I think he's going to be ready to play. I think that team will be ready.
Yep. Okay, so I got one more to do here. Well, let me take a quick gander and see what we got going on here. Okay, let me see here. The one that I've been looking at. I'm not going to bet that one. I can't root for Baltimore. Because the Bengals have totally mailed it in. But I can't root for Baltimore. But then again, this is about money. This is about trying to give legitimate, really good picks. I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens -10 points at Cincinnati. Not that I want that to happen, and I will gladly take a loss on that. Okay? I will gladly take a loss, but I don't know how they don't beat them by 20. I just don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know how they. Yeah, I don't know how they lose that game outright. But
If you had enough guts to take about $1,000 to just laying around and bet the money line on the Bengals, you'd make a killing. But I don't. They're not going to see no money coming in on Cincinnati. Just it isn't going to happen. So as much as I'd love to see Cincinnati upset them, I can't see it, and the 10 points isn't enough. A spread like that, getting 10 points at home, the bookies and Vegas are begging you to take that 10 points because they know that there's no way Cincy can hang with them. But So let's go over this real quick. I got the Saints -13, Chicago -2.5, Baltimore -10. You've got Minnesota +3, the Giants -2.5, and Green Bay -5. Sound right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think I think this looks a little bit better than what we did last week. I think the results
at least right now.
I think the results will be better. I think last week was just a real weird week for football. It just was really weird. I'm watching the games and just different things were happening and it was just a bad day. So we'll fix it this week. We'll get the money rolling this week.
That sounds good. And why don't you give out your Twitter handle here?
Yeah, I'm at
check you out and your parlays and everything.
Sure. I'm at the Bigger Dog. That's DAWG. At the Bigger Dog 44, and throw me a message out there or a follow. I'd love to get as many as I can here and put out some, you know, my opinions on some of these games, and like to chat back and forth with fans of the Browns or just the NFL and just get your idea about it, because I do fantasy football too, and you can ask me a question about that or whatever, anything to do with football. Shoot me a message at the Bigger Dog 44.
And you guys can follow me at CLE Rod B on Twitter. Comments or suggestions about the podcast, you can get in touch with me via email That's rod.bluhm, B-L-U-H-M, at gmail.com. And you can follow Peter Jones. It's at the underscore IT underscore hedgehog. And Phil Staley is at Phil underscore Staley. So thanks for listening. Clay Matthews Jr. belongs in the Hall of Fame. And we will catch you next time.